This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon. I'm Ronnie Floyd. Welcome to the Washington Watch. I'm the senior pastor of Cross Church in Northwest Arkansas and the former president of the Southern Baptist Convention. I'm sitting in for my friend Tony Perkins, and let me encourage you to follow him on Twitter @TPerkins. Also, I hope that you'll follow us @RonnieFloyd, and we'll keep you updated on matters in our nation and even beyond. First up on the show today, we have Congressman Steve Womack from the state of Arkansas. In fact, we have him in studio with us today because I'm hosting this from Northwest Arkansas. We're going to be talking about the various protesters of town hall meetings and also President Trump's recent revoking yesterday of the federal transgender bathroom guidelines. And then we're going to hear today a powerful word from ESPN senior NFL analyst Chris Mortensen. Back in January of 2016, Chris was diagnosed with stage 4 throat cancer. One of America's great leaders, all of a sudden, his life changed immediately, and he's now fighting for his life. This will encourage you greatly. And then we're going to close out the show talking about one of the hot issues all across the country, and that is the issue of immigration. Pastor Sammy Rodriguez, the president of the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference, will give us his thoughts about President Trump's immigration policies, as well as many other things. And in that segment, we're going to be talking with many who are in the studio today here to ask these questions, along with just participating in this broadcast. Well, the White House is rolling back guidelines that allow transgender students to use the bathroom of their choice, and protesters are showing up at the congressional town meetings. Representing us here today from Congress is Steve Womack. He's a personal friend, a dynamic leader. He has served our nation in an exceptional way in the military. He represents our home state of Arkansas, and in Congress, he's on the Appropriations Committee, the Defense, Military, Construction, Veterans Affairs, and Labor and Health and Human Services Subcommittee, as well as the House Budget Committee. Steve is also a member of the WHIP team and various caucuses. Well, welcome to the broadcast today, Congressman Womack.
What a great honor to be with you. And to be on this program again. I've been on this program before, and I have a number of my colleagues in Washington that from time to time guest host this program. It's just a tremendous honor to be with you.
Well, thank you, Congressman. And I know this week you, along with your colleagues in Congress, really both the House and the Senate, all across America, been going out talking to the American people. Media shows that all kinds of things are happening. Why don't you tell us what you're hearing out here about that? Not just what you're hearing, but what your colleagues are hearing from across America.
Well, first of all, it's important to know that every month in the House of Representatives, members are given an opportunity to go back to their districts for what we call a district work period. Now, some of the media types would like for you to believe that they've just gone on vacation. But for a good many of us, we go back and spend time in the corners of our districts engaging with the people that elected us and sent us to Washington. And that's what this week has been about. And so for the first time, really, genuinely, since the inauguration, members have gone back and have organized what we now know as town hall meetings. In my case, it was a coffee in a local community. And people, when they recognize and see that there is going to be a public appearance by somebody, then some of the organized efforts that are going on, this resist movement, are taking advantage of the opportunity to load up on those meetings and try to make their voices heard in sometimes not so much of a charitable way. So a good many of our members have gone back and established these coffees and town halls, and you're beginning to see some of the results on national news broadcasts. As an example, yesterday, you know, our very own junior senator from Arkansas, Tom Cotton, had about 2,000-plus people. In fact, people turned away at the door to hear him in Springdale, right here in Springdale, Arkansas. And I think it's pretty common what's happening. As I said, in many respects, an organized effort to gather people, get them committed to coming in and having a show of force and proclaiming loudly their disdain for the current administration and the direction that our country might be going in the aftermath of the November election. And it's been a really contentious issue for members of Congress.
So how do you take back, Congressman, and navigate through the challenges of what are the real issues versus, you know, what are just thoughts from people that might be angry about something around or about America?
Well, the themes are pretty common, really. And in my conversations with some of my colleagues that have had a similar experience that I have, the themes run around the, as I said, the disdain for the current administration, the dislike of Donald Trump on a variety of fronts, executive orders, and some of the rhetoric that came out during the campaign and that just doesn't seem to go away. And then there are grave concerns about what Congress will do or will not do with regard to the Affordable Care Act, with tax reform, with immigration policy, the building of a wall, border security. And then there are a number of other executive actions that have taken place already through the Congressional Review Act to stop some of the onerous midnight regulations that took place in the last 60 days of the previous administration. And some of those deal with issues regarding the climate and the environment and those kinds of things. So a lot of questions about climate change and what have you. So it covers a waterfront of issues. And look, you just have to be good at reading people to be able to separate between just outright anger and substantive discourse on issues. And if you look at some of these town hall meetings that are going on, if you don't have to watch much of it to figure out what the strategy is. The strategy is to disrupt.
Right.
And to they're not there to, in many respects, to listen to your response or to really gain an understanding of your perspective on a given issue. It's just really to make a statement. In fact, I had a lady tell me, she said straight up, I'm not here to listen to you. Hmm. You are here to listen to me. Hmm. And so we having a two-way conversation can be difficult in these circumstances. Hmm. So it's really important that you are able to understand and discern between the anger and the people who show up that truly in a meaningful way want to delve into an issue and try to get some clarity on it, which we have a hard time with right now because we haven't coalesced around a lot of things at this stage of the game.
So, Congressman, yesterday the administration rescinded the Obama-era guidelines, saying that further legal consideration is needed. The FAMA Research Council, which obviously sponsors the Washington Watch, applauded the move, calling it a victory for parents, children, and privacy. In fact, today's announcement fulfills President Trump's campaign promise to get the federal government out of the business of dictating school showers and bathroom policies, according to President Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council. I believe, obviously, many conservatives are applauding this change. And in all of this, do you think that sending this back to the states is the answer? Because it appears to me that if we don't do that, it's the overreach of government in relationship to matters locally and regionally.
Not just on matters of transgenders in bathrooms and this sort of thing, but the overreach of the federal government over the last several years,
yes,
I think is one of the reasons why there was a dynamic change that happened in November. But I'm reading from, and I want to share this with your listeners today, I'm reading from the Dear Colleague letter that came, a joint, dear colleague, from the Department of Justice and the Department of Education. And I think this sentence embedded in this Dear Colleague, which explains what drove the president to act the way he did, it says, in addition, the departments believe that in this context, there must be due regard for the primary role of the states and local school districts in establishing educational policy. Mm. And this was geared partly towards civil rights and partly toward education policy. And I think that's a key statement. And
that's right.
So the answer to your question is, of course, there is a tremendous role for local governance. And far too much of what drives America today on any front has been elevated to a federal level. And it is our hope that we can devolve many of the things that have kind of collected there at that federal level and be able to break these down and push them back down to the states where we think there is a much better constituent to elected official ratio. And that's where I think you're going to see a lot of policy go from the federal government back down to the states and local control.
Well, Congressman, let me ask you this. We're just a couple of minutes or so away from our break in this segment. We really want to thank you for being on with us today. But on Monday night, or Tuesday night, I'm sorry, Congress, both houses will meet together and the president will speak to them. What do you really hope from where you sit, based off everything you've heard and based off where you know our country is, what does the country really need to hear from President Donald J. Trump this next week?
Well, first thing they need to hear from Donald J. Trump, and I have a concern right now, and I don't want to throw too much caution to the wind, that we are able to have the State of the Union address on Tuesday night free of interruption in the House chamber. As you know, members will be on the main floor, the Cabinet Secretary, Supreme Court, the Diplomatic Corps. But up in the gallery, every member has a guest that they can invite. And it is my hope that my friends on the other side of the aisle don't invite people to take seats that might serve to disrupt the proceedings. If town hall meetings that we've been having is any indication, there could be some disruptions during the State of the Union address. But here are a couple of three things that I think the president should talk about. First of all, the president desperately needs to do his best to unify this country.
That's right.
Some message of unification. We're in this together. We got a lot of challenges facing ourselves. So let's lock arms and let's work together and let's achieve what is best for America. And then on top of that, there are a number of things the president has said he wanted to do, build walls, major infrastructure program, not to touch the social safety net programs. All of these are very expensive propositions, and we're $20 trillion in debt. We had a deficit last year of easily over a half a trillion dollars. And if you look at the CBO projections over the 10-year window, we're going to be back into deficit projections that could go back into the trillion-dollar-plus category. And that's not good news for young people today that, that there's going to be more debt piled on their generation. So I want to know, how is it that we're going to generate the kind of jobs and economic growth in our country so that we can pay for the things that we know we need and be able to protect programs that our senior community is reliant upon? How are we going to do these things and make them sustainable in the future? Those are a couple of things. And then on top of that, you'll probably hear a strong discussion about national security. Because it's an unsafe world, we have a lot of problems scattered around the globe, not the least of which would be ISIS and provocations by Russia, the buildup of the Spratly Islands and other areas in the South China Sea by China, the ongoing issues with Iran. So we have a lot of national security issues to discuss as well.
Well, thank you, Congressman Steve Womack, for being on the Washington Watch. We really pray for you. We thank God for you. And to all of our listeners today, please stay tuned. Call a friend. If you know anyone that is struggling with cancer or any disease, you're about to hear one of the most compelling stories by America's NFL senior analyst of ESPN, Chris Mortensen.
The first cries of a newborn baby signal the miracle of life. There are some who believe that life actually begins at that point, that whatever is in the womb is just tissue and could possibly even be an accident. But the Bible shows something quite different. In Psalm 139, it says, "For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made." Life begins in the womb at the point of conception, and the Bible makes it clear that it's not just tissue, and there are no accidents with God. Life is a precious gift that's meant to be treasured, not destroyed. In fact, life is so valued by God that He sent His Son Jesus to be the sacrifice for sin so we could have life with Him for eternity. If life is that important to God, shouldn't we do all we can to protect it? For your help in defending the sanctity of human life, thank you from AFR.
A real estate collapse, sensuality, political rancor, a nasty election. Those were all characteristics of our nation in the 1790s, right before the Second Great Awakening.
President of Life Action Ministries and founder of One Cry, Byron Paulus.
The effects of the Second Great Awakening lasted for more than 50 years. Tens of thousands of churches came into existence. Hundreds of colleges and universities began. Hospitals were built. The modern mission movement began. We are still realizing the effects in our nation today. But awakenings don't just happen. They're preceded when God's people get together to seek Him.
If your heart longs for another great awakening in America, then meet us at Fusion, a Heart Cry for Revival conference in late April in Asheville, North Carolina. Find out more at heartcryforrevival.org.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this family, Jeremy and Sharon, and a couple kids, and they're all very healthy, and they did something to save money. They switched from health insurance to MediShare, and then they had a third baby, a little girl named Anya, and she was very sick.
We've had a lot of hospital visits.
A whole week in a children's hospital, CAT scans and blood tests and chemical tests, and I think we saw a dozen doctors. It was all shared.
Yeah, the bills were shared by the other members of MediShare. That's how this works. So get this, they save hundreds a month. They don't have to deal with health insurance companies or government health care plans, and they get to be part of a community that cares.
MediShare has always been there for us and helped meet the needs that we have as a family.
It's no wonder this is growing so fast. It is worth looking into. Here's how. Call 855-PSALM-23. Now, it's available everywhere but Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome back to the Washington Watch. I'm Ronnie Floyd, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. In 2016, in January, ESPN senior NFL analyst Chris Mortensen told all of America and the world that he'd been diagnosed with stage 4 throat cancer. Earlier today, in front of several hundred business leaders at the Northwest Arkansas Business Persons Summit, I had the privilege to interview Chris personally. He's a friend, a tremendous man, outstanding follower of Christ. And we had a wonderful moment of hearing his compelling story. And it was just incumbent upon me today, knowing that the Family Research Council stands for faith, family, and freedom. And this is a story of faith and family. Listen carefully to just a few of these words from Chris Mortensen.
I want to go back to that moment in January of 2016 when you learned that you had stage 4 throat cancer. That obviously was an unforgettable moment and really changed the trajectory of your life immediately. So what was that like for you and your family in that moment?
I had been ignoring some symptoms throughout the season. The problem with it was in January of 2016, we have our football season. We don't have time for our health or anything else. We work, you know, doing that 6 a.m. to midnight thing. And I'd been ignoring some symptoms that could no longer be ignored. Went in there, and within 15 or 20 minutes, he'd pretty much say, you know, I got news for you, not good news. And he said, you have stage 4 throat cancer. And he said, now we'll do the lab work, we'll do the path work, but I'm telling you, that's what you have. And of course, the lab work came back right away, and that's so I had maybe 15 to 30 seconds of being stunned, because he said, look, you're in for a challenging year or two, and he said, so he gave me a few suggestions, and then it was really a matter of breaking the news to Mickey and the rest of the family. And that day, and I want to say it was January 7th or 6th, of 2016. That day was a memorable day, emotional day, probably more so for Mickey than me, because you go home and how do you break the news to your wife, your spouse, that you've got this? And when I told her, she literally crumpled to the ground. and cried out to God, no, 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 God, no. And I was fine. That's the thing about it. But when you see them in that type of pain, and I was just trying to reassure her that I was going to be fine and I wasn't going to die. That's kind of the attitude I had. You know, the one thing that I experienced at MD Anderson, and I would say this, you know, listen, knowing what our country has been, seems to be experiencing and has experienced the last couple of years, the divide that we have and maybe some angst and worry about who we are as a country, what direction we're headed. I know this much, my faith in humanity was restored at MD Anderson because I'm not just talking about the doctors, but the support staff, the receptionists, the young professionals, the diversity, the ethnic groups that were represented who are working there. And they're so smart, they're so bright, they're so caring, they're so compassionate that I felt like I experienced humanity at its finest. Now, we're made in God's image, and there's a lot of facets of that. But one of it is we're a reflection of God's character. I experienced God's character through the people who worked and served the MD Anderson and set at some level. You know, one time a man sitting there waiting to get his chemo, he looked lonely. He looked a little stressed and had a chance to go over and talk to him. He didn't have any family members there, and he was scared, and so he allowed me to pray with him. And then another time, you think if you've gone through chemo, you're always feeling like you're freezing. And they have these nice warm blankets, they got heated up, you know. But another time on a 75-degree day out on the bench right in front of MD Anderson, somebody was just shaking, freezing, a man, and not in great shape. But it allowed me to go get him a blanket. A simple thing is getting a blanket. So it allows you to practice your own humanity. You experience the humanity, but you're able to practice your own humanity. You don't fight cancer alone. God does the fight. And I didn't resent, but I don't like the whole cliche or mantra of kick cancer's butt. They use another word for butt. Just because I figured out cancer actually kicks your rear end. And but God, in his healing power and grace, he fights that battle for you. I did learn that because, and the prayers of others. Because you get to a point where you're so weak where you actually feel, some people, I think, draw closer to the Lord. There are times when I felt like it was more distant from the Lord. And that's when you realize that his grace is sufficient, that it's that God is enough. And then the prayers of people, and I know there were countless people who prayed for me because I've made this progress. I've come through this. I think the one prayer that I probably had more than anything is, did I really run the race the way the Lord wanted me to run it? And my prayer has been, let me finish this race. Let me finish it stronger. I don't think I'm finishing this. I don't think this race is finished the way you want me to finish it. So let me finish this race. That's my selfish prayer anyways.
Chris Mortensen, what a powerful account. Putting all of the challenges of life really where they really count. The power of community, healing, and of course, self-evaluation. A man who has received so many awards in fields of journalism, been nominated for 2 Pulitzer Prizes, and yet dealing with life. Pray for Chris Mortensen. Compelling interview. Encourage others who may have cancer. God may want to use you to encourage them to finish the race well. When we come back here on the Washington Watch, we're going to be talking about the subject of immigration. We have several people in the studio today. They're going to be asking questions to Reverend Sammy Rodriguez, along with myself, Ronnie Floyd, sitting in for Tony Perkins. And we're going to be talking about this very difficult issue. And so in a moment, return with me, because I do want you to listen to this powerful interview with our friend Sammy Rodriguez.
Make making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Midweek, we saw oil drop about 1.4%. That certainly wasn't good, but now it seems to be rallying back up again. It dropped its three-day win streak, mostly on profit-taking. Oil is regaining a little bit of momentum towards the end of this week. There's this kind of tug of war going on between supply cuts coming out of the Middle East and increased production coming out of the U.S. And that seems to be keeping oil kind of range bound right where it is. And frankly, oil being range bound right where it is, I don't think it's a bad thing. As a matter of fact, I think it could be a pretty good thing to bring some stabilization into oil. It looks like the U.S. again added six more rigs last week, put them into production. That's the fifth straight week of increase in production through additional rigs. And it doesn't look like that is going to stop. They're not adding an enormous amount of rigs, but nonetheless. So what is being cut coming out of, now I'm talking about global oil coming out of Saudi Arabian OPEC, is being added by the U.S. So that tug of war is likely to continue. Some believe that this rally that we've seen, 30-year rally, we have not seen records breaking, at least in the Dow Industrials, this many days in a row for 30 years. And it looks like we are eyeing up more increases. Amazing. The Trump rally so far is still alive and well.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to the Washington Watch. This is Ronnie Floyd sitting in for my friend Tony Perkins today. We're going to be talking about immigration for the rest of this broadcast today. And we have a friend who is going to be joining us from the state of California, Reverend Samuel Rodriguez, who is the president of the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference, the world's largest Hispanic Christian organization, representing millions of evangelicals worldwide. Sammy, I want to thank you for being on the broadcast today. Welcome to the Washington Watch.
Hey, Ronnie, thank you so much for having me. A pleasure and a blessing indeed, my friend.
Well, Reverend Rodriguez, who prayed at the president's inauguration, is a powerful and influential Christian leader. He's also an author. And Sammy, you have called, along with many of us, but you have been very diligent out there on the front lines of calling for racial unity in this country. In fact, you've even said that it's racial unity according to the Lamb's agenda. Would you explain that for a moment or two for our listeners today?
Indeed, indeed. It begins with the understanding that a divided church will never and can never heal a broken nation. And fragmentation that takes place in the church occurs as a result of cultural myopia. Let me explain. When people wake up in the morning and they identify themselves primarily via the conduit of their skin color or their cultural heritage, black, white, yellow or brown, whatever it may be, they dilute the very fact that, and I'm speaking to the church now, that the number one descriptor that should be upon each and every one of us is the fact that we are born again children of a living God. We are Christ followers. I am a Christian before I am black, white, Asian, or Latino. I am a Christian. And we have been so fragmented by politics or even cultural inclinations or definitions. I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat. I'm not married to the agenda of the donkey or the elephant. As Christians, we must be married exclusively to the Lamb's agenda, which is the gospel, the Bible, the Word of God, the life, crucifixion, resurrection of Jesus Christ.
Well, thank you, Reverend Rodriguez, because that really puts it all in perspective. I trust that you're aware today that the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, and Homeland Security Chief John Kelly are in Mexico City today, meeting with the President of the State of Mexico. I would like for you to listen just for a few seconds today to something that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said, and we're going to take it straight there via tape today.
We also reiterated our joint commitment to maintaining law and order along our shared border by stopping potential terrorists and dismantling the transnational criminal networks moving drugs and people into the United States.
Sammy Rodriguez, do you believe that the Donald Trump administration would be able to come to terms with the state or with the nation of Mexico?
I believe not only will he succeed in coming to terms with the nation of Mexico, it behooves him to come to terms. It was the facilitative platform that launched his candidacy, his commitment to stopping illegal immigration. And as Christians, we must all come together and believe. And even with our compassionate, convicted worldview, we are a sovereign nation. We have every right to protect our borders. And illegal immigration is not only detrimental for us as a nation, but it actually exacerbates human and sex trafficking on the border, at the border, exponentially. We're talking about 9, 10, 11-year-old girls being sexually exploited by coyotes who are transferring them over. It is morally reprehensible. So Donald Trump, the president now, he launched, he exploded on the scene with a commitment to stopping illegal immigration. I believe the Mexican government will inevitably not surrender, but will inevitably come to terms and come to the reality that we have a migratory crisis that requires both nations to address with integrity, but with determination indeed.
And based off of the words of Secretary of State Tillerson today, that sounds very, very encouraging. And so we pray that that will occur. Now, Sammy, you as a major leader in the country relating to not only those who are Latino or other Hispanic leaders, but you chose to work with President Trump. You opted to engage. Now, we just have less than a minute before we're going to have to get out on this break here today. But would you just take just a few seconds today? Tell us about that process, and we may come back after the break and talk about this. But what was the process you went through relating to that?
No, it behooves us to engage the president. And even prior, to me, it was more about the platform and less about the personality. I am catapulted by my commitment to life, the sanctity of life in the womb, by religious liberty, the Supreme Court. So we may have disagreements on other issues, but I believe there are cornerstone issues that must never be sacrificed on the altar of political expediency. And that drove me to work with Donald Trump and now with the President of the United States.
Well, that's a tremendous perspective, Reverend Rodriguez, and that is one of the reasons I stand shoulder to shoulder with you, is because of your deep commitment to that. I'm talking this afternoon with Reverend Samuel Rodriguez. He's the president of the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference, the world's largest Hispanic Christian organization representing millions of evangelicals worldwide. In just a few minutes after this break, we're going to be talking a little bit more with Sammy Rodriguez. And then we have many guests in the studio today, and some of them are going to be asking Pastor Rodriguez a few questions about this entire challenging issue of immigration. I want to thank you also for listening again to the Washington Watch. Be sure you call a friend, encourage others to listen in. We're about to get into some real deep stuff. And so I hope that you'll stay tuned to the Washington Watch. We'll be back in just one moment.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join me, my wife, Luana, along with General Jerry Boykin and other special guests on our first ever Free to Believe Alaska cruise from July 29th to August the 5th. We'll sail from Seattle on Holland America's luxurious MS Yuridam, known for impeccable five-star service and incomparable cuisine. Some of the most breathtaking beauty in God's creation will surround you as you rest, relax, and worship. You'll witness stunning wildlife and the majestic scenery of Glacier Bay and relive Gold Rush history and classic frontier towns. And you'll hear the latest updates from Washington on the new administration and Congress. Come fellowship with other like-minded believers and journey with us on a vacation that will enrich your body, mind, and soul. For more information, call 844-872-5155 or visit TonyPerkins.com. Don't miss out. The number of cabins is limited. Again, that is 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Human life really isn't as valued on our planet as it should be.
The discussion of civil rights has traditionally been limited to the issue of race. But as Dr. Alveda King points out, life itself is a civil right.
We speak about life from conception until natural death. And so anything that interrupts that also interferes with our civil rights.
Visit AFAstore.net to find the DVD Life is a Civil Right and all the resources of the AFA Cultural Institute.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to the Washington Watch. My name is Ronnie Floyd. I'm a pastor in Northwest Arkansas. I'm here today from Northwest Arkansas talking to all of you here today about one of the critical issues in our country. Joining me from the state of California is Pastor Sammy Rodriguez, a tremendous Hispanic leader, a very influential man in this entire challenging issues of immigration, and a friend of ours. And we're so thankful for Pastor Sammy. Pastor, I want to ask you a question as we come back on before we take some more questions here in the studio today. But the organization that you lead, how do they view President Trump's immigration policy agenda?
It's a mixed bag, Pastor Ronnie. It is, in full disclosure. It's interesting to note, by the way, that 30% of Latinos voted for President Trump. That's critical because it ran counter to everything that the media pundits predicted, well, the entire election did for that matter. But 30%, of which 66% of the 30% self-identified as Hispanic evangelicals. That's pretty powerful. First time ever in American history, that constituency may very well be responsible, especially in Florida and Pennsylvania, in determining the outcome of this election. With that being said, these are individuals who are 100% committed to stopping illegal immigration. They do not want amnesty either. What their concern stems out of, is what do we do with those that have been here for 20 years, for example, 15, 20 years? They work, they're not dependent on government subsidies. Sure, they're working with falsified documents. We're privy to that. But their kids were born here. Their kids were raised here. They are Americans. English is their first language. And the idea of deporting the parents and leaving the kids behind and breaking families, that's where the angst arises. And right now we're attempting to address that with the White House. We're attempting to bring clarity on behalf of Homeland Security, ICE, to make sure that even the Kelly memo that was issued yesterday, that there's strong clarity where we distinguish between the narco traffickers and the gangbangers that I believe should be deported as expeditiously as possible. I don't care how long they've been here. If you're undocumented and you're here to engage in nefarious activity, we need to deport you in 5 minutes, period. No questions asked. But if you're God-fearing and hardworking, and you're not dependent on government subsidies, and your kids were raised here, and you attend our churches, we have to find a way to somehow integrate them and legalize them, not make them citizens yet. If they want to become citizens, they need to go to the back of the line behind those that are trying to enter in legally. But just separating families is causing a bit of anxiety with our pastors and our churches, because many of these individuals occupy our pews every single Sunday morning.
Very interesting insight. Sammy, and to all of our listeners today across the country, inside of our studio here today, we have several young leaders, all millennial leaders, by the way, and we're going to let them ask Pastor Sammy a few questions, and I will chime in as need be, but I want to first recognize Braden Buss, and Braden is from the state of Oklahoma. Braden, would you state your question to Pastor Rodriguez?
Pastor Rodriguez, we hear about the topic of immigration from different perspectives, that is, from the left, from the right, and from a so-called moderate position. How does the Christian perspective, because as you stated earlier, we serve no party but Christ alone, how does that perspective, informed by the scriptures and by the word of God, how does that change the conversation about immigration?
Thank you, Braden.
Thank you for that question. It's redemptive. It reconciles conviction with compassion. Let me explain. Leviticus 19. Treat the stranger, treat the alien, the immigrant, Hebrew exegete, to treat the immigrant within your midst as one of your own. Because at one time, you were immigrants in Egypt. Romans 13, though, we must adhere to the laws of government. That's the call to make sure that we stop illegal immigration, and we respect the rule of law. And then we have the quintessential, Matthew 25. Quench the thirst, feed the hungry, welcome the stranger. This is how your Christian walk will be measured. So what does that mean? It means that we don't have to be either or. We need to be both and. We need to stop illegal immigration as Christians, but we likewise recognize the image of God in every single human being. So we should look for a reconciliatory outcome that is biblically based, that will respect the rule of law, but will not separate families. And for example, let me give you an example. The Dreamers. This question about, what about these kids? These kids had nothing to do with coming in here illegally. Their parents brought them here. They had no choice. So should they pay for the sins of their parents? And these are questions as Christian leaders that we must answer and then lift our voices up with respect and civility to advocate for a biblical solution to an issue that has separated us for years now.
You know, Pastor Sammy, one of the things that I believe is we need to be clear about our roles. The government's role is to protect the country, to protect all of us. Their role is that. Our role, obviously, in the church, those who are followers of Christ, we're going to love the refugee, we're going to love the immigrant, and anyone inside of our borders, or we go to ministry across the international countries of the world, we're going to love people. And that's what we do. That's where the church. It comes back to your statement a moment ago about the importance of the Lamb's agenda. Jesus is for people. And, boy, we sure need to keep all of that in mind. Pastor, I want to have one of the next young men in this room today would like to ask you a question. His name is Lee Larry. Lee, why don't you tell Pastor Rodriguez where you're from and state your question.
Pastor Rodriguez, I'm from Kentucky. But right now, we have to live in an area here in Springdale, Arkansas, where there is a very healthy Hispanic population. How do we answer those Hispanic Christians that have concerns about our country's border security policies?
Pastor?
Great question. Hmm. Great question indeed. If we are in relationship, in Christ-loving relationship, we can share truth if they have concerns, if they have questions regarding, and again, if they're here legally, that's another conversation. If they are here illegally, then we should encourage them to understand that we have, as a nation, every single right to protect our sovereignty, our borders. But it doesn't dilute the fact that they're created in the image of God, that Jesus has great purpose with their lives, 1 Corinthians 2:9, that it is God's will for them to be saved indeed, through accepting the acceptance of Jesus Christ, of course, in their heart as Lord and Savior. So, as Pastor Ronnie alluded to, we touched and reached them with love. We're not Uncle Sam. We're not the government. We're not there to execute immigration laws. But we are there to elevate the conversation, where if there is anxiety, we want to alleviate it with biblical truth and scripture, without somehow endorsing a political agenda or a legislative initiative that is doing in the church. Again, Pastor Ronnie is brilliant. That's why he's one of my preaching heroes, indeed. It's about the gospel. It's about Jesus. Our job is to love them and to comfort them without getting into the political minutiae that separates many.
We're talking today on the Washington Watch with Pastor Sammy Rodriguez, who is the president of the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference. Pastor has been very gifted in answering these difficult questions about immigration. And today we're going to move to another question of those in the studio today, and this is Andy Jennings. Andy, why don't you tell Pastor Sammy where you're from, and please state your question.
Pastor Rodriguez, I'm from Texas. I'm doing ministry here in Arkansas now, and as a young adult minister, I really want to build a ministry that reflects the demographics of my area, and part of that area is a healthy Hispanic population. So my question is, as a white pastor trying to reach out to a Hispanic community, what are the main barriers that I need to be aware of in reaching out from the Hispanic community's perspective, and what's your advice in overcoming those barriers?
Yeah, I love your heart, and let me give you, let's redeem the narrative a bit, if I may. Instead of barriers, let me speak about opportunities. Let me explain some recommendations. Number one, to reach the community, the Latino community is very relational. We're very relational. What does that mean, relational? So it's about family. Address issues of family, whatever it may be. Address issues of family. Number two, make sure you reflect the community that you are attempting to reach. So if you're a church planner, or if you're a singles minister or youth pastor, make sure your praise and worship team have a Latino involved. Make sure your leadership team, your executive team, whatever term you want to apply to it, have a Latino involved. So make sure that the optics reflect the metrics. So you really have to, you will only attract what you reflect. So make sure in your leadership, in ideas and anecdotes, in your sermons, in your preachings, there is a thread that will engage this community without alienating the others. So it's beautiful. And I have this crazy utopia that every single church should be reflective of the community where that church resides in. So if it's 20%, 30% African-American, Latino, Asian, white, we should really just reach the entire community regardless of race or color, and really reflect that tapestry of God's kingdom.
That's a powerful word and very, very helpful for those of us that are in the ministry of the gospel and to all lay people of churches today that might be listening in. We have in the studio today Pastor Sammy, Congressman Steve Womack. In fact, we interviewed him in the very first 14 minutes of this broadcast. And Congressman Womack, who serves our state, who has served our nation, even in the military, a great American. And if you would, Congressman, why don't you state your question to Pastor Sammy Rodriguez?
First of all, Pastor, you're a blessing, and it's great to hear your voice and your heart. The question is, because we have both concerns right now as members of Congress, as members of the legislative body, we have the discussion of immigration, but at the same time, we have the discussion of a refugee crisis that is going on around the world. Is there a biblical discernment between the immigrant and the refugee, who by very definition have different status as it concerns federal law?
Indeed, and Congressman, thank you for your service and your leadership. There is a meta-narrative, a thread that unites both the refugee issue and the immigrant issue, which is this beautiful commitment that's part of our collective American DNA, our exceptionalism of compassion. We are a compassionate nation indeed. We are the most transformative nation on the face of the planet because of the way we treat others. We are light in the midst of darkness. We're not perfect, but we definitely are not, are like them. We are an exceptional nation indeed. And part of that exceptionalism lies embedded in this compassionate worldview of helping the refugee and likewise addressing our migratory issues and dealing with the immigrant. So there is a meta-narrative. The concern is that right now, for example, the number one most persecuted group in the world in need of refugee status are Christians.
Mm.
Are Christians, and that's not hyperbole. It's reasonably affirmed and validated Christians. So, and I know there are also Muslim refugees and other religious groups, but right now the number one group that really needs help around the world are Christians suffering persecution.
That's right.
So as a nation, we have to continue to provide avenues and entry points in order to protect the innocent. So I wholeheartedly agree with a very overly rigorous vetting process to make sure we're able to exercise compassion, but with great deliberation and due diligence. We want to make sure people are not coming in here exploiting the system with ill intent. But I do believe there is a meta thread that combines the refugee issue along with how do we deal with those that are currently in our nation that are immigrants. And that meta narrative is the one of compassion that makes America exemplary indeed. And it comes out of our Judeo-Christian value system, by the way.
Well, that's an outstanding answer, Pastor Rodriguez. And let me say that we have only about a couple more minutes with you at the most. And so let me go straight to Tuesday night for a moment, which our president will stand before both houses of Congress along with a guest that they're able to invite to that session. And he will speak to not only them, but to the nation. This is a pivotal moment in American history. We are in a major crisis, and we must find a way to come together. What kind of, if you were sitting down with the president in a minute to minute 20, what would you tell him, President, I really wish you would speak to these issues. What would that be?
Mr. President, I really wish you would speak to the issue that every single American, we are blessed and we are created in the image of God. I would begin with that. My fellow Americans, we are all created in the image of God. We are. And because of that, we stand committed to these core principles of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This idea of one nation, not many nations, not a black nation or a white nation, a Latino nation, an Asian nation, a Republican nation or a Democrat nation, but one nation under God. And it is under God. It's God over man and man over government. It's by God's providence, His grace, His mercy, under God, with liberty to pursue our dreams. Liberty to actually exercise our ideas, our creativity, our innovative spirit, not to depend on Uncle Sam for absolutely everything, but on the giftings that God has placed in each and every one of us. Liberty for our children and our children's children to be educated with our values and not be indoctrinated by secular thoughts or ideas that may run counter to the values we hold near and dear. And justice for all without exception. That message. And simultaneously saying, as a result, going forward, I am launching a national committee, a national commission on healing and reconciliation. That's a game changer, my friend.
I agree completely. In fact, I said it yesterday to someone, what you just said about a commission to bring racial healing in America. Thank you, Pastor Rodriguez. You have been a blessing today. Thank each one of you for listening to the Washington Watch. I'm Ronnie Floyd, sitting in for Tony Perkins. On behalf of the Family Research Council, we thank you for your commitment to faith, family, and freedom.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.